Welcome to Front Page Jerusalem, a weekly news digest covering events in Israel. It's relevant and accurate information you need to know, direct from the Holy Land. You're listening to Front Page Jerusalem.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Front Page Jerusalem, the voice of Israel to the world, brought to you by Christian Friends of Israel in the city of the great king, Jerusalem. I'm Earl Cox. Ben Kenchlow is on assignment.
And I'm Kevin Howard in Jerusalem.
In a world that loves focusing on depressing and negative news, it can be rare to find out about those who build bridges and save the lives of those few who care about. Compassion is a rare commodity, and one that, when expressed, speaks louder than words can adequately tell. Children are cherished by their parents, but sadly, that cherishing is sometimes not enough when medical care is desperately needed. While Israel has a great medical system, many of the surrounding countries are not as advanced. Sometimes these systems can be closed to those who need them the most, the poor, and those who have no connections. One way Israel has become a light to the nations is through compassionate medical care, specifically heart operations to the children of her often hostile neighbors. Children from diverse places such as Gaza, Iran, Iraq, Syria, and even Kurdistan have come to Israel to receive vital heart surgeries from Israeli doctors and medical professionals. To learn more about how children from often hostile countries are being selected and brought to Israel, Kevin Howard recently spoke with Jonathan Miles of Shevet Akim. We'll bring you that update interview in just a moment. But first, let's hear from the CFI Jerusalem News Desk, where David Milburn has the recent headlines from Israel. David?
Thanks, Earl. The trigger for Israel's unprecedented repeat election touches on one of the major fault lines in Israeli society, the role of the growing ultra-Orthodox Jewish community in modern life. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's prospective government recently collapsed over the issue of military draft exemptions for ultra-Orthodox men, a source of long-time resentment among the secular majority of Jewish Israelis who are required to serve. The conflict over the draft law is just one of several deep disagreements over the role of religion in Israeli society. While the ultra-Orthodox parties wield significant political influence, experts say that their cloistered communities are being left behind by modern society, with long-lasting negative consequences for the future of the country. Now, before we return to Earl, here's today's This Page in History.
On July 11, 1859, General John Maxwell, organizer of the Zion Mule Corps, was born. This British commander met Russian emigres who were partnering with the British Empire to wrest Palestine out of the hands of the Ottoman Empire during World War I. He was unable to enlist foreign nationals as fighting troops, but he could form them into a volunteer transport mule corps. He began recruiting volunteers from among the Jews in Egypt who had been deported there by the Ottomans. The Zion Mule Corps served as the basis on which the Jewish Legion was formed, the first such military unit organized since the Bar Kokhbar revolt 2,000 years previous. They had a distinctively Jewish emblem and flag and took part actively in a war which they had a vested interest. The current IDF and Border Patrol defending the soil of a sovereign, democratic, and Jewish Israel on the land of Palestine can look back to this era as the seed of its noble origins.
Welcome back, everybody. To take a close look at some of the good news happening in Israel, Kevin Howard recently talked with Jonathan Miles of Shevet Akim, who is one of those who works diligently to bring children in need of life-saving heart surgery from surrounding countries to Israel for medical treatment.
Thanks, Earl. I am in studio today with Mr. Jonathan Miles. He is the coordinator for Shevet Akim. Jonathan, thank you for joining us on the program.
Glad to.
Jonathan, tell us a little bit about how this endeavor began and what is the humanitarian purpose of Shevet Akim in saving a child's life?
When I came here, summer of 1990, visited the land, different ministries, congregations, looking for where I fit in. Of course, I didn't fit in anywhere. Total outsider. Nobody was waiting here for, you know, someone else to show up. But one night in prayer, sought the Lord's face, and this doesn't happen to me often, but I felt a very clear word from the Lord, and it was simply, "Will you come?" And very powerful, and I'm pretty indecisive, especially on big decisions like that. But I knew instantly that was a call from the Lord. And no explanation of how, what, or where. Called my wife. Dear, we were living with my parents. She wanted to get out from her in-laws. She said, yes, that sounds good. Let's do it. And she was about to give birth to our fourth child at that point. We had very little money, no visa, no job, but we came. The fears that rushed in on the second day were overcome with the words of Jesus, seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness. Your Father in heaven knows what you need, and he will take care of all those things. So we said, look, all right, this is a call from God. We're going to walk by his word. So we came, and my family was expecting 2 or 3 months they'd get the SOS call and come and take us home, because how could this possibly succeed? But we came, went through the first Gulf War, and I read shortly after there in the Jerusalem Post one day a little article about how Christian Friends of Israel was helping the Russian Olim, the new immigrants. I said, hey, I'd like to see that. Went down to the distribution center here on Moriah Street, and you know, there was a throng of, you know, 100 or more a day were coming, penniless, in great need, and Christians around the world were really seriously sending clothes and funds and opening their hearts to these people. And I realized this, you know, this is something significant, and I volunteered to get involved. Spent the next several years, day after day, meeting with those folks about their special needs and how could we give some encouragement to you. Very simple message, as you know. We are indebted to the Jewish people. We've received so much from you, even the Messiah. And for some of them, just those words was a revelation. Jesus was a Jew. I never heard that. We have friends in the world. I always thought the whole world hated us. Babushkas with tears running down their face. It was an amazing time. And so I'm very happily focused on that. I came here to serve the Jewish people with whom I'm intimately connected. Didn't think a lot about our neighbors. And to the extent that I did, I didn't have anything against them, but I probably felt, man, they're really getting in the way of what God's doing in the Middle East. It began to change one day when a Ukrainian boy and his mother, 13-year-old boy, came in to the distribution center. They were not Jewish, and they had somehow gotten into the country just trying to save his life because he had leukemia and needed a bone marrow transplant and wasn't available where they lived. They got here, they came into the distribution center. Will you help us? The doctors here say that they can save my son. They want $64,000. We don't have any money. Okay, what's the obvious answer? Well, sorry, that's not anything we're involved in. And of course, we don't have funds like that. And let me pray for you before you leave. But again, the Word of God had been working in us. And don't turn away the one who asks for you. With God, all things are possible. So I said, well, let me go down to the hospital and I'll talk to the doctors and come back tomorrow. I think I was secretly hoping, as often, that people are presenting a desperate case to you that, oh, they're exaggerating, it's not really what they're saying, maybe it's a scam. So I went down to the hospital to get out of this situation. The professor there says, no, it's true, this boy will die within 2 months. I think we can save him, but I have to tell you one thing. That boy could be dying in the doorway of our emergency room, and we won't let him through the door until the last dollar has been paid. That's not the way we like it, but that's the reality. Expensive treatment. Big medical centers can't just throw open their doors to the world. But his words, which sound harsh, were a blessing. Sometimes speaking the truth is the best thing we can do for somebody. Because I had to face the reality. This beautiful boy, we have the treatment right here to save him, and we're going to say, no, it's not for you. You're different from some other child who would be quickly rushed in and treated. How do we as followers of Jesus relate to that? Yeah, there's a lot of good reasons to pass this boy by. You've got your own ministry to worry about. Next day they came back in, and by God's grace, just had enough faith to say, look, I don't know how we can help you, but we'll give what little bit we have. That's important. You know, God doesn't expect us to be the solution, but we have our 5 loaves and 2 fishes. We'll share the story and we'll pray. Let's see what God can do. That's not so hard, is it? The burden's not on us. It's on the Lord. And when we took that step, it was amazing to see how saving a child's life brings people together from every background. Jews, Christians, secular, religious, everybody who heard about this boy said, of course, we have to help him. We can't turn him away. Within a month, both the funds had come in and the hospital had become a partner under enormous pressure from the Women's International Zionist Organization. How could you send that boy away to die? So it was a big battle, but finally the price comes down and he goes in and he gets a very central message, beautiful message. Your life is as valuable as anybody else's. There's no difference between you and anyone else. He lived with us for a couple of months, had his treatment, put his trust in God, and thought, this is an amazing experience. A couple of other families heard about this in similar circumstances, and at that point we realized there's so much potential in the amazing medical care in Israel to be a blessing to our neighbors, to be a blessing to the nations. We really ought to take on this job and registered as a small nonprofit here. And things began to take off from there. Some of the women who were working with me in CFI started going into the Gaza Strip at that time. And that sounded crazy to me. And the last thing I was interested in, and, you know, how do you get out alive if you do that? You know, all we have are these images and what you hear from the political and religious leaders. But they came out and said, no, it was incredible. The people were so grateful that anyone came in to see them. And they were spiritually open. Well, I shared the gospel and they came up and said, what must I do? Really? I didn't expect to hear that. It took me a long time to get over my fears and prejudices and to go in there. And they were in the southern Gaza Strip, totally Muslim area. It was all true. The people were lovely, open-hearted. And everyone I talked to, I realized, this person has never spoken to a follower of Jesus in their life. There's an unreached people group 2 hours outside of Jerusalem. And that began to shift my perspective on what's happening in the Middle East. I said, okay, God's restoring Israel. Yeah, he's going to bring redemption to the world through them. He's got a purpose in this. And he's got a heart for those people who don't know his son. Eventually, a group of us, again, with roots and Christian friends, started going into the Gaza Strip, looking for ways to be a presence there for the kingdom of God. A friend challenged my family and I think you ought to go live there. I hadn't thought of that, but I didn't have a good explanation why we shouldn't do that. And we ended up 5 years down there. Didn't speak a word of Arabic when we moved in. I was speaking Hebrew with the people in the refugee camp there. And they loved us, opened their hearts. You know, first night, knock on the door. Oh, what's happening? It was, of course, neighbors with steaming bowls of hot food and fresh bread. Welcome. And they kept doing it night after night. It never stopped. Most generous people I've ever lived with were the poorest people I've ever lived with. And, of course, we found the same kind of story as this Ukrainian boy where we started here in Jerusalem. So many kids. This was the early days of the new Palestinian Authority, 1996. So many kids who used to get an automatic referral to the hospitals in Israel were now being left to die down there because, once again, this child's life wasn't important to anyone. I read at that point about a doctor, American Jew, Ami Cohen, heart surgeon, who had come, immigrated, couldn't find anywhere to work in Israel, so he went to this little hospital in Holon and said, hey, let's start a program and bring non-Israeli kids, something he had learned from a Christian woman when he was serving in Korea in the U.S. Army. She got him involved in doing surgeries on orphans there. Miraculously enough, somehow the hospital agreed to this thing, and I read about him in a magazine, and he was bringing a couple kids from Ethiopia. So right away I called him up, what about the kids from Gaza? He said, those are just the kids that we want to reach, but I can't get anyone in Gaza to talk to me. And that's when the penny dropped for me, I think. All right, I'm an outsider here. What can I do of unique value? I was able to say, you know, we can go into the Gaza Strip for you. We are there. We can bring those kids to you. We can do something to build bridges between the Jewish people and their neighbors that they cannot do themselves. And he said, bring us the kids. Don't worry about money. Totally different spirit from where we started. Don't worry about money. Bring us the kids. We'll worry about money later. And he pushing more and more kids, more and more kids. In the end of each year, he trusted us. The hospital trusted both of us. In the end of each year, amazingly, God would provide the funds for all the surgeries done in that year. And that's been going on more than 20 years now. And his program is called Save a Child's Heart. It's grown and developed, and now we're at the stage where it's multiplying to other medical centers in Israel, to the Sheba Medical Center, just in the last month to the Hadassah Hospital here in Jerusalem, where all this started.
It's good to remember that there are many people working to build bridges and save lives in Israel. Please remember to pray for them and to pray for the peace of Jerusalem. Well, right now we need to take a short break so that you can hear about an amazing outreach project of Christian Friends of Israel that's making a real difference for people in the land of Israel today.
It was to be one of the most joyful times in their lives. Yaakov and Yael had committed to each other to be married for life. But when they discovered how much a wedding would cost, the realities of a new life in Israel began to set in. Foregoing the wedding and just living together was out of the question. But how would they ever be able to afford to get married, not to mention the hope of the wedding memories they could cherish forever? A friend mentioned Christian Friends of Israel Bridal Salon. Suddenly, hope was found in what they would have normally considered an unlikely place. Hi, my name is Tiina Kärkkäinen, and I am the coordinator for CFI Jerusalem's Bridal Salon. Each month, we are able to help Israelis throughout the land with their wedding plans and help defray the sizable expense of all that getting married carries. In this way, we are not only lightening their economic burden, but encouraging marriage on a practical level, in a day when many take an easier option. God ordained marriage, and we believe helping those choosing marriage encourages a stronger start, which makes for stronger families and a healthier society. This is just one more way CFI Jerusalem is helping the people of Israel build a brighter tomorrow.
Christian Friends of Israel's project, Bridal Salon. Just one more way we're making a difference in Israel, one life at a time. For more information, go to frontpagejerusalem.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to our continuing discussion between Front Page Jerusalem's Kevin Howard and Jonathan Miles of Shevet Achim.
So can you inform our audience of the need, the type of surgeries?
You know, in the beginning, we were trying to get involved in everything, but over time, saw that open-heart surgery for newborns, for children, biggest bang for the buck that you can get, medically speaking. These kids are dying slowly before the eyes of their parents. That's terrible enough, but then think, I know that there's a surgery across the border that could save that child, but I can't get to it. 90-plus percent of these kids can be healed and sent home well after an open-heart surgery. I'm not aware of any other medical crisis for children like that, where you can have that kind of success, where you can bring kids from far away, heal them, and send them home well. You know, there's other treatments that go on and on and on, and you have to stay close to the hospital the rest of your life. But this is something you can truly do for children from neighboring countries without being irresponsible and letting them go back to their homes. So we're totally focused on heart surgeries at this point. Worldwide, one out of 200 newborn children is going to need an open heart surgery. So among your listeners, there's going to be many families that say, yeah, that happened to us or to our extended family. If we don't abort those kids, which the West more and more is doing, but they could be healed through an open heart surgery and go on to have a perfectly normal life. You can understand the joy that comes into a family when they're in that desperate place, have no options, can't do it themselves, and we can come to them and say, God has not overlooked you. Your child matters. Israel, who you may have thought of as an enemy country, they have an open heart to you. God will use them to bless and save the life of your child. So that's what's been going on. And we started in Gaza in 96, 2003, the first Iraqi child came here after the war. And that was a bombshell because there'd never been any traffic or relation between those two countries. So when that happened, that was big news. It broke open a path, and children have been coming from Iraq since 2003.
Jonathan, how far is your reach then? How much have you been able to reach throughout the entire Middle East region?
We've kept Gaza open all nonstop since 96. Since 2003, Iraq. In the beginning, all over Iraq. Eventually, after a year or two of that, the word reached Muslim Scholars Association there, something I think connected to the Muslim Brotherhood, and they made a big fuss in the parliament, said, how could we be sending our children to Israel to be healed? So they managed to scare off our Arab-referring doctors in the Baghdad area. Although one TV report I remember from the time said, it's ironic, isn't it, that only Israel wants to help our children. However, the Kurds in the north of Iraq, as many of you know, that's a totally different story. And I was surprised. That very first baby who came was a Kurd. I didn't know anything about the Kurds. And again, I had to overcome this barrier of unbelief. It happened that we were in the hospital in Kirkuk, and this two-day-old baby is laid on the table in front of a U.S. Army doctor. He examines her and says, she has to be operated on within 2 weeks if she has a chance for a normal life. And he begins to cry and says, I see kids like this all the time, and I have nowhere I can send them. And we've been bringing these kids from Gaza for many years, and I'm thinking, I know the doctors in Israel would love to get this child, if only it were possible. But of course, it's not possible, right? Well, and that's usually where we let things die. But God will give us the faith and say, no, test me in this. Just take a step and see what I can do. First step was going to that family and with great fear saying, well, you could go to Israel. And they all start talking in Kurdish and eventually they say, Israel, no problem. And that was my introduction to the Kurds. They love Israel. Israel's a role model to them. How and why that happened, I Don't know if anybody really knows, beyond the fact that, you know, when the tribes of Israel were taken away by the Assyrians, they were resettled in Kurdistan, and these two peoples grew up together over millennia, and their hearts are still tied together. And so they've started coming, and that continues until today. And in the wake of the Syrian civil war, that was another psychological barrier that had to be crossed, was seeing Syrians come in here. As you know, the Israeli army brought in many, many wounded and sick through the Golan Heights. In the area of heart surgeries, we were able to work with the Interior Ministry here and do the same thing and start bringing in Syrian refugees. And they're still coming. There's one recovering right now from a heart surgery in the hospital in Tel Aviv.
So how does your model take care of everybody in the provision? Is this paid for and the people walk away when it's done?
Well, the first and biggest piece of this is the willingness of the people of Israel to give up any benefit from this, and in fact, probably to lose funds from this, but they still will say, yes, it's worth doing. There's something in the soul of the Jewish people that responds with joy to the idea of reaching out to their enemies. And you see this in all kinds of ways, but when you present them the opportunity to save the life of a Syrian or Iraqi or Gaza child, something in them responds to it. I believe it's the call of God. I mean, the origin of the people was the covenant with Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. Through you, all the peoples of the earth will be blessed. You know, and that's what it means to be a Jew, actually. And when you present that opportunity, they rise to it. Very rarely do you get a negative reaction. Overwhelming positive. So the hospitals are taking 60%+ of the normal cost on themselves. In real numbers, normally an 80,000 shekel surgery goes down to 30,000 shekels. So that's about $20,000 down to $8,000. Where in this world can you save a life for $8,000? You can't get an emergency room in our home countries for $8,000. But that includes everything, the surgery, the hospitalization, the visits. So it's amazing opportunity that's before us. So the hospital takes the biggest piece. They leave that little bit for us. So we come with our little bit of faith, what little we have. Families contribute when they can. Of course, a refugee family doesn't, but there are some Kurdish families who actually can. And we say, hey, this isn't charity. This is a family pulling together in a crisis. Let's all do our part. And other secular NGOs, even Muslim, secular nominal Muslim NGOs in Iraq among the Kurds, everybody, again, agrees, of course, we should help save these kids. Let's do it. Let's pull together. It's an opportunity to demonstrate what the name of our organization means. Look how beautiful it is, good and pleasant, when brothers will be together in unity. That's where the Lord commands the blessing.
Talking about the logistics involved, what kind of obstacles do you deal with over the time period?
Well, you know, you hear from Palestinian situations, sometimes you'll hear, oh, they're denied access to medical care, they can't get across checkpoints. We've been working with the Gaza Strip, which is the most difficult place to get in and out of, for more than 20 years, and have never had a child denied access to Israel on the same day, in the same hour, if it's an emergency. That is the guiding principle among the people of Israel. Of course, someone in a life and death situation, they're coming in. There's a lot of coordination, there's paperwork, we need to get the Palestinian side involved as well, so it's not always easy, but the door is open. For these other countries, Iraq, that first Iraqi child that came in 2003, the Israeli embassy, we got the child to as far as Jordan, the Israeli embassy is closed for 10 days because of one of these holidays, and the consul, who later on became the ambassador there, he comes back from Israel, reopens the embassy, just to issue a visa for this little baby. So, again, that gives you an idea. We have partners. There's a willing heart among the people of Israel. So until today, we've never had a child turned away. I'm in some discussions with the Interior Ministry here right now. There's a girl and a boy, both who have turned 18. And the initial reply, and let's remember, these people are under all kinds of pressures, but the initial reply was, no, 18, we're not going to accept them. Tell them to go somewhere else. And, you know, I've been trying on behalf of the Lord and all of us to just stand respectfully but say, no, Israel has never turned away a child in a life and death situation. And they've accepted children over the age of 18. This is not an option to tell that child he can't come. So,
Jonathan, what kind of things can our listeners be praying for in regards to this work?
We are praying and would ask your listeners to pray that we would have eyes to see the works that the Father is doing, hear the words that he is saying and only do those things. I feel after many years that many good ideas that I've had, that you can work, throw yourself into them endlessly, and in the end they may not come to that much. Basically, we can do nothing of ourselves. But if we watch where the Father is working and join with Him, wait on Him until He shows us that, we'll find fruit and joy and ease. Instead of always struggling and burning ourselves out, an easy yoke and a burden that is light. So yeah, praying, let's lay down our own efforts. Lord, show us what you're doing.
Jonathan Miles, he's coordinator of Shevet Akim. You can find out more about saving a child's life at shevet.org. Jonathan, thank you for being our guest today on Front Page Jerusalem.
It's been a blessing to be back with CFI again. So Lord bless you and your ministry.
Thank you, Kevin, for that heartwarming interview about those in Israel who are working to bring life to those who do not have adequate medical care available in their own nations. Well, our time is almost up for this week, but before we go, let's take another visit to the CFI Jerusalem News Desk with David Milburn.
Thanks again, Earl. It's been 5 years since Tel Aviv was crowned the world's smartest city at the Smart City Expo World Congress in Barcelona, Spain, 2014, beating 250 competing locations, including London, New York, and Amsterdam. Since then, the city appears to have made it a personal mission to live up to the name, advancing efforts for digital initiatives and smart transformation that serve as a blueprint for other municipalities. One of these initiatives, which has mostly been kept under wraps so far, is Tel Aviv's City Zone project, a mini city within the city at the 20-acre Atadim High Tech Park, where advanced technological solutions for smart city ventures are vetted and tested. The project is run in partnership between Atadim, the Tel Aviv municipality, and Tel Aviv University.
Thanks, David. Well, that's our show for today. We hope that you've enjoyed the program, everybody, and thanks for joining us. And please don't forget to support this station because it supports Israel. But before we go, let me invite you to join us again next week on the same station as we bring you all the latest news from Israel and the Middle East. So for now, on behalf of the entire staff of Front Page Jerusalem, I'm Earl Cox reminding you that because God loves Israel, I do too.
You've been listening to Front Page Jerusalem. For more information, go to frontpagejerusalem.com. Front Page Jerusalem is brought to you by Christian Friends of Israel Jerusalem, making a difference in Israel one life at a time. Front Page Jerusalem is a production of Level E Media Incorporated.